This is HPR episode 2046 entitled, HPR Community News for May 2016, and is part of the series, HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers, and is about 76 minutes long. The summary is, HPR Community News for May 2016.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by AnHonestHost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi, this is Ken reminding you to go over to podcastawards.com and vote for Hacker Public Radio every day this week, right up until Sunday. Every vote counts. Thank you very much. Hi everybody, this is HPR Community News for May 2016. My name is Ken and I'm on my own tonight unless somebody decides to drop in. First of all, HPR Community News is a monthly look at what's been going on in the HPR community. So it's a regular show and it's scheduled to be released the first Monday of the month, which means we record on the Saturday at 1800. UTC. Right now, Dave was unable to join me, and nobody else has joined in yet. So we'll see what happens as the day goes on. This show is just a quick introduction to what's been going on in the last month, and most important thing has been new hosts. We've had Bitbox, N. Julian, Schism, Pope 523, Steve Sainer, Matthew, and Lyle Lastinger. All of you have submitted your first show, and thank you very much for doing that. We really do appreciate it. Another important thing that has happened in the last month has been that we've been nominated for a podcast award. So I'm guessing there's quite a lot of new people who are coming to HPR for the first time after getting our link over there. The voting is still open until June the 12th at 2300 hours EST. And this is the 11th podcast award ceremony, will be held on the 26th of June at 8 p.m. Eastern. So as of the 6th, 6-4, I'm not sure what the month, what sort of month that is, but only over 3 million votes have been cast by 348,932 unique voters. So you can... you can help us out if you go over every day to Podcast Awards, and there's a link to that website on our own website, Hacker Public Radio. If you go over there, and please vote for us every single day. And the reason for that is to allow smaller podcasts like ourselves to have a chance against the bigger ones that are up for votes. And if you do, please spread the word using the hashtag PCA16. So PCA16, that would be awesome. Okay, before we go any further, yes, I'm going to have to do it. I'm going to have to do the About HPR thing. So HPR itself has been running as a project since, let me see. So it's been 10 years, 8 months. 10 years and 8 months to the day. Today with a Techie Starter, which was our predecessor podcast. And the shows are basically, unlike your regular podcasts who have a regular host every week or a regular lineup every week, HPR shows are contributed by the listeners themselves. So if you imagine it as like a bar camp where people walk in, put a post-it note on the board, and then volunteer to do a talk. That's kind of where we're coming from. So if you enjoy listening to podcasts, which you probably do if you've come from Podcast Awards, and you have never done a podcast yourself, our goal here is to help you do that. So you can simply go to the HPR webpage and click on Give Shows, and that will walk you through all the steps that you need to know. The most simple one is just record something and upload it, and we'll do the rest. If you want to do more, there's a lot more that you can do. So that's about the community. So some things, the only requirement we have for shows is that they are of interest to hackers. And what's a hacker, I ask you? So we have the link to hacker culture. So that is a hacker as a hobbyist. So somebody who enjoys the intellectual challenge of circumventing with a novel and clever outcomes. Now, you could be arguing all day about how a hacker is, and in fact, several people have. So that's what we are. So if it's of interest to hackers, and go to our archive page, you'll see lots and lots of shows that have been deemed of interest to hackers. If you don't know what to record, there's a list of requested topics. And usually the first thing we like to hear is a little bit about yourself, how you got here, how you got into technology, how you got to be listening to podcasts. You could always share your podcast feed with us as well. That's really interesting. We tend to be dedicated, HPR is dedicated to sharing knowledge, and which would please us no more than anything else. If somebody comes on here and decided to do their own show, we're more than happy to help you out with that. And there on the About page, you'll find out about policy decisions are proposed and discussed on the mailing list, which is open to anyone to join. And the mailing list discussions are brought to the attention of the listening community through this show, and anyone can participate in. So that is pretty much that. Welcome to all our new listeners. And what we do is we like to go through the various different shows and make sure that we discuss each one so that at least you get some feedback on your shows, because quite a lot of times people, even though they might enjoy your show, they don't necessarily give feedback. So that's what we like to do here every month. There's many ways that you can give feedback on the show. Every single show has got an email address, your email address posted on it. If you don't want to use your email address, you can use a throwaway email address from Gmail or something and forward that to your own account. Or you can contact us here, admin@hackerpublicradio.org, and we'll set you up an alias that you can use. Okay, the first show was the community news. And also, you can give comments to shows by clicking on the comments for the page. So big, this is Geek Dad says, a big thanks to John and Dave for doing the community news this month. Your review of my show, 2019, gave me good ideas for future shows, most specifically a show on how I use OwnCloud will probably come next. Love HPR, thanks to the host and Bins. Yes. Dave Morris says, great, glad the show was useful. If the result of what we do is more shows in the queue, then it seems worthwhile. Yes, Dave. And I see Dave is going to do my trick from last month. I was away last month, and Dave and John did a fantastic job going through the shows. It was very refreshing to hear this show. I'm normally on it, but somebody else stepping up to the plate and doing it for a month. Now they're paying me back, but making me doing it all by myself this month. But how and ever. So the next day we had Bitbox with What's in My Bag, what I carry in my bag when I hit the road. It's a Swiss Gear messenger bag, satellite, Toshiba satellite, HP Pavilion, and a Wacom touch tablet, high gain antennas, whoa, an awful lot of kit. And I was thinking, listening to this, what the overall weight must have been. So he says at the end he owes me some shows. No, nobody owes me shows. So what's in your cab? This was John, of course, referring to the fact that Daily Toolkit is Bitbox is a long distance trucker and carries all this kit around with him while he's on the road. And excellent show. Thanks so much for taking the time to record and also to put together such detailed notes. A couple of follow-up topics occurred to me. Thanks, John. What's in my cab? Always interesting to hear what kind of things people consider must have when they have to live in small places for a long period of time. How to back up an 18-wheeler into a loading area. Yeah, very good. And I always amazed at how professional truck drivers can back those giant things into the awkward places. Much respect. Very much like to hear those shows as well. JWP says, great podcast. Really like your podcast. Thank you for being so clear about what's in your bag. I like the simple approach to your items. The Wi-Fi whips, you got to do a show about that stuff for sure. Please build on what you shared. I like the recorded part a lot as I drive a lot too. Okay. And Christopher M. Hobbs says, tell us about trucking. Hey, wonderful episode. Had a lot of great tips about durable kit. I'm going to look into a few of them. Would you consider doing an episode about truck driving? People see truck drivers every day and don't know much about the world you're living in. Thanks for submitting shows and welcome to HPR. I couldn't agree more with all of those things. You see, all those people now have been trained to trigger other people to think of more shows. So one way to get people, if you don't know what show to do, you can always go to ircfreenode.net and go to Oddcast Planet and ask your question there. And guaranteed, if you do your what's in my bag or how I got into Linux/podcasting, then we will come back with you for some good ideas on how to do, what else to do. Setting up Raspberry Pi 3 by Dave the Man Morris. Bought a Raspberry Pi case, heatsink, and SSD, and I have actually done the very same thing here with this Pi-bo, thanks to Dave's recommendation. And Mike Ray says, Pi in a metal box, and this is in related to the fact that Dave was saying that there's a metal aluminium cage, and that the Pi has Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. So Mike says, Pi 3 in a metal box. If you put a Pi 3 in a metal box, it acts as a good Faraday cage and Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, RF cannot get in or out. Good episode. I bought one of the Pi-bo cases recently and the layer pieces snapped apart in several places. Very poor quality, in my opinion. Ooh, gosh, I don't know. I thought they were quite good myself. Okay. JWP, GNU Nano Editor. The GNU Nano Editor is a real hardcore editor for people who do not want to hurt themselves with another editor. Yes, so, but JWP, you got to remember that Dave was just poking you with a stick, so you submit a show. And Dave replies, of course, Pi-bo, Faraday cage, Pi-bo, and Nano. Hi, Mike. Thanks for confirming. Yes, I thought a metal case would block Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, as you say. However, these are being sold as suitable for the Pi 3, although I imagine this is more to do with the size. Seems odd, though. Pi cases are made from quite firm acrylic, 2.8 millimeter thick, according to the digital calipers. Some layers have quite narrow pieces which wrap around items on the USB connectors. Also, you have to remove a protective film from each layer, which can put strain on the narrow parts as you peel them off. If you have neatly snapped them on a I have neatly snapped them on occasion, but the trick is to be slow, steady as you peel, support the weaker pieces. Once assemble the layers above and below, keep everything nice and firm. To JWP, he replies, there is nothing inherently wrong with Nano. It's simple to use, it does the job. I use Pico on a VAX cluster running VMS, where it was the editor for a Pine email client for many years. However, it was a tremendous relief to move away to a more powerful editor like EDT and TPU on the VAX, then Emacs, VI, and Vim on Unix. Find myself presented with Nano was a shock when I put my fingers and brain are trying to operate in VI mode, so I want to install Vim as soon as possible, preferably with my own Vim RC and all the plugins I normally use. Mike replies, metal boxes and Emacs. I suppose there are enough holes in the metal Pi case to let some RF out, but as the antennas are on the PCB, it would be very inefficient compared to being put in a plastic case. Editors? Question mark. Emacs, of course, the only true editor. Emacs speak doubly so. Oh dear, we all know Kate is the only true editor. Biza says, alternative Pi server setup. Hi, Dave. Thanks for a very interesting show. I'm using the Pi 2 as a server, but avoided a lot of complexity by using SSHFS. I can connect to the client to the real server with one line typed in the terminal window. From then on, I can access the server as if it were a real local folder on the client. Very simple, very reliable. I'm not sure I followed the rationale of booting from the attached SSD, given that you have a micro SD card in the Pi. Whichever you want to connect, the Pi or SSD is a great low-cost service solution. I'm staggered that small businesses aren't buying them in huge numbers. Always enjoy your shows. Keep them coming. Dave replies, SSHFSSSD. Thanks for the comments. I tend to use NFS out of habit. I spent many years setting up NFS between Unix systems and others of my work, so it's what I do. I have used SSHFS briefly, but it's not a permanent thing. I will consider using it more. My thinking about using SSD was to build a long-term repeated use, whereas a micro SD is not engineered to the same standards. I have heard of SD cards failing in the past. I don't want that to happen on the server. I noticed that the micro SSD will get very light use in configuration, so it would last longer. My information may be out of date, though. And that was the comments for that show. One thing I will say is that SSHFS, while convenient, is definitely a lot slower. And you would also need to put in a heartbeat into your SSH config file so that the SSH connection stays up. And what I've seen happen is if the underlying SSH connection is terminated for any reason, then your open files remain open and it's virtually impossible to unmount them. So that is why, not sure, NFS suffers from the other problem in that they client continually tries to connect back to tell the now non-existent server that it has gone away. But anyway, enough about that. Maybe people can do some shows about the benefits of both. John Culp, remapping keys with Xmod map. And in this, John was wanting to, anytime the spacebar was put in the file name, that you would replace with underscores. And he wanted to know if there was a way to do that using the identifying the file open dialog. And Tlatu has a long-term question out there about, you know, every application should use a file open dialog of choice. So there should be an option that if you're on KDE, it would open a KDE file dialog, and Firefox has its own file dialog, and that it should be a configurable item like editor or file dialog in which you could modify your own, you could pick the file dialog chooser of your choice. Comments on this, Beezy says, interesting approach to prevent creating new files with bad names. You should also consider the command line tool called Detox. This tool is specifically useful when dealing with entire directories of existing files with bad file names. Dale Morris says, nice idea. I've been bitten by this over the years with Unix and Linux, and this is a quite original solution. Personally, I've gotten into the habit of using either tab while typing in existing file names so that the shell formats it for me with adding backspaces before the backslashes before the spaces, etc., or by enclosing such names in quotes. However, the strategy of avoiding them file names in the first place would be a good one. The command I use in Detox I've never heard of, to be honest, but I have used prename, which is a Perl script, and it's one of the things I download on every install, and you can use Perl's regular expressions to rename files, all of them. Even as part of the HBR or show processing, I use that as well. Using a smartphone as a microphone. And Julian came in here with a very, very simple thing. If you need a microphone for your computer, you can use your use this app. Absolutely brilliant idea. And it's even in the F-Droid repositories. So I'm storing, it was a short show. Can't argue with that, but there is no limit on the size, folks, of the show. If you want to rant on, that's perfectly acceptable. And if you can do a short, quick tip like this, that is also awesome. So, links for those are in the show notes. The following day, we had Christopher M. Hobbs with a show on What's in My Bag. And these are great episodes, if you want to. He already had done one before. And now this is an update, which is an excellent idea. Thanks, Christopher. And this one, he's got a link to a 16-ounce thermos, which he mentioned in the show. So, great idea. Tell us what's in your bag or what's in your toolkit. So, the following day, we had old engineers and new engineers. And this was by Gabriel Evenfire. And basically, he got one of those simple puzzle in a real world handcrafted puzzle made out of a block of wood with two ball bearings in it, and you need to get the ball bearings to either side at the same time, obviously. And he worked through various different approaches and the approaches that his kids used. And I thought this was a fascinating episode because it's like the Pearl, there's many way of doing it type approaches. And it's always good to kind of think outside the box and have more opinions. So I really enjoy that. Steve Sainer said, well done on the audio description of the puzzle. I had almost a perfect picture in my head before seeing the embedded photos. Not an easy thing to do. I will agree there. The story itself is also great. One of the most fun shows to listen to. And if all of you professional podcasters that are hearing blah, 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 I don't edit shows. My job here on HBR is to lower the bar so that new entrants can come in and produce better shows. Sam, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Gabriel replied, saying, glad you liked it. Glad to hear the puzzle description was clear. That's my biggest worry about the podcast, that it's hard to imagine what's happening. Thanks for the feedback. Good to give. Dave, who can't be here with us, but doing my trick from last month. Most interesting shows. Thanks for this. It really made me sit up and think. I arrived at the true answer just before you mentioned it, which is probably more coincidence than anything else. I'm usually poor at those sort of things. I hadn't even considered any of the three options myself, so it was fantastic to do that. I'd never seen that one as well. Now we had another one, some basic alarm information. This is burglar alarm information from Schism. Excellent show, lots of comments going through the alarm system. One thing that I had in my mind was when he was doing the reed switches, was there a current going through it or not? Because if there was a current going through it, how much of a current? How do you control that? How do you back up battery if the current goes off? That sort of thing. That was one of the things. And I really have a lot of interesting questions for this. I would like to have use something like this to scare cats out of our garden, so to put on the garden hose, that sort of thing. I imagine it would all be on the same thing. I like the idea of sensors, laser pointers, using those as sensors to IR receivers. So this is definitely a topic that I could like to see a lot more stuff in this. Hopefully we can do a series on this. For those people who don't know about HPR, we also run series. So if you want to submit a show, which we encourage you to do, should become obvious by now. If you think, hey, this is too much, and I want to break it up into a little bit of different chunks, you can always do that. Submit a show. There's several. If you go to the page, you see in-depth series, get shows, in-depth series. And you see the various different shows that are there. Some of them are open, some of them are closed. So if you want to do your own series, feel free. If you want to join another person's series, you can also do that there as well. So Frank says, I found it very fascinating. Used to do training and support for a company and manufacture security systems. We made the boards that the door contacts, PRIs, and the like connect to. But we didn't make the peripheral hardware other than the card readers. I really enjoyed doing the doohickey on the other side end of the wire worked. Bill says, glad you liked it. Maybe you could do one from the other end and we could do a competing podcast. Frank says, I haven't been in the industry for almost 10 years. Can't remember enough to talk coherently about it. Todd says, yes, very interesting. Please do more. Dave says, interesting subject. There's a lot I don't know here. I'm looking forward to more. Couldn't agree with you more. Bill says, anything particular you guys would like to know about? And Frank says, I would think that some person would be interested in knowing about prox readers, card and cards work. I encountered lots of misconceptions about prox readers, such as the out a signal to their own, all on their own sums. Yeah, so things, blah, 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 motion detectors, smoke alarms, that sort of stuff, how all that stuff works. Where's the best place to put them? Tips about installing them. What do you do when you power cut them? What's your recommendation on wireless cameras? Would you recommend getting IP cameras? Camera, do you do anything with cameras at all? So lots of questions. And the following day, we had NY Bill, oh yes, with a DSO-138 oscilloscope kit. And he describes basically a small, affordable oscilloscope kit that he purchased. And he got them for about, it's a counterfeit kit. And he basically soldered all the parts, put it together, and it kind of worked. And I've seen another YouTube that I subscribed, channel that I subscribed to, did more or less the same thing with another one. And it seems like an awful lot of soldering. But I guess, guys, if you wanted to do soldering, then this is something. This is something that if you have built this, you would definitely consider yourself capable of soldering. What I found most interesting about this was NY Bill's approach to it. As always, he has given me lots of tips in the past about just how he approaches doing a project, and this one was no less enjoyable insofar as that he it didn't work, and it still doesn't work. We don't know if he has fixed it or not, but when he finished it, he was saying the fun that he was getting out of it and the pleasure he was getting out of it was tracking down the issues in the build. So when I heard he hasn't built it, then I thought to myself, fat chance of me being able to build one. Dave says, very tempted to get one of these. This is one of these things, build an installer and a laser cut plywood case. When I was in Edinburgh's Mini Maker Fair recently, I was tempted to buy one, but didn't because I wasn't sure what I'd use it for. They were selling them for around £30. Great subject for a show. Couldn't agree more. And my Bill replies, if it was a color screen, it might be the same kit. There are a few other DSOs kits out there with non-color screens. I'm sure these things can be brought cheaply in bulk. Looks like someone might be making a bit off them, selling them a custom-made plywood case. Good on them. Very entrepreneurial. Next show was a book review. And why? Why haven't we thought of this before as a series? And it was by Mirror Shades, whose name gets butchered by the text-to-speech. This is a book that I would really love to be able to leaf through to see if it was useful or not. And I think it was a brilliant idea for a show. And just then I was looking up at my bookshelf thinking, yeah, a lot of these books I would like to recommend. I would like to review, because some of them I really want to recommend and some of them I want to say, no, never buy them. So that is something that folks should consider doing as well. If there are some good books out there on various different topics, please submit that, because as Frank says in the comments, sometimes nothing beats a book, and you can't go far wrong there. I think, yeah, when I was listening to this, I was thinking about that. Is that a Lisa project where you have a Raspberry Pi with a 64 gig SD card, and you know, the whole Earth civilization is gone, and there's a pocket ref book and a Raspberry Pi and an SD card with a little screen and enough batteries to get it going, and you can reboot society. Seems like an awesome, awesome, awesome idea. The following day was episode 2031, and it was a quick intro to OBD2 with Android. And this was an excellent show about connecting up Bluetooth devices to the OBD2 interface on automobiles, or cars, as we call them over on this side of the pond. Well, autos, actually, we call them over here, where I am. For those of you wondering, new, I'm Irish and I live in the Netherlands. That explains the accent and that sort of thing. Yes, love this. And I actually recommended this to a few guys in work who were inquiring about it. So there you go. Always interesting. And that's the thing about HPR. It's not about popular shows. It's about doing shows that are useful to somebody, even if that somebody is only one person. Not saying that this is, but because this is interesting. I don't actually own a car, but I was very tempted to go out and just get one of these anyway to see what sort of information you would be able to get from your car. Steve Sainer tells us about how he came to Linux. And he's been using Linux for 20 years now, and it's been Slackware. And what's interesting to hear is that he uses this as his servers. Pearl Sainer says, wife, brilliant, insightful, funny. well-written and well-recorded. I've learned some things about you. This program has insights for the beginner as well as the experienced. Highly recommended listen. Jonathan Gump says, bring on the rockets. Very nice episode. Can't wait to hear about model rockets. Also, he is into ham radio. That's another topic I can't believe nobody is working on. Points to himself as well. MY Bill, the old greybeards in the basement. It's amazing how many of us discovered using Unix systems in the depth of our college basement. And Dave says, really enjoyed the show. Excellent show. A lot of old memories were triggered with the mention of VMS, SunOS, Spark stations, Usenet, and the rest. Looking forward to hearing more shows. What I found interesting was running Slackware as a server in a business. Interesting right there about how you keep it updated and all the rest of that stuff. But good stuff. Then we had Mirror Shade with another episode, Bodhi Linux, which is a Linux distribution from its own website, an Enlightened Linux distro. Bodhi Linux is built on top of Ubuntu LTS, released featuring the Mocassa desktop. I'm probably butchering that, but that's what I do here. And an excellent little external episode. I had never considered using Bodhi Linux, but I might actually give it a go here. Although I'm not sure about going back to Debian after being on Fedora for so long. Funny, the fact that I'm on Fedora was a bet to see if I could. The following day, we had Frank Bell with his 5C bread. This was based on Frank describes his recipe for 5C bread inspired by the first mystery novel Earth Delights. I think it was a 7C bread he mentioned in the show, and he mentioned that he made a typo, but I think Dave corrected that. Frank, I made a couple of loaves of this yesterday, this time added oats, and also found a can of steel-cut oats in the pantry. I used about a quarter cup for two loaves, pouring boiling water over them and letting them soak for 2 hours before mixing the dough. The results tasted good, but the oats seemed to add more to the texture than to the flavor. I note, though, that the results passed my girlfriend test with flying colors. Very good. Dave Morris, must try, or a modification thereof. An interesting recipe. There are quite powerful flavored seeds there, and I'm curious to find out how they taste in combination. I often use sesame, poppy, sunflower seeds, and might put caraway on a rye roasted loaf. Frank says it's quite good, but different. It's not every day nor every taste, but I quite like it. I cannot envision eating it with jam. I fear the sweetness of the jam would clash with the savouriness of the bread. As for rye and caraway, if I bake rye bread and forget the caraway, it fails the Hungarian girlfriend test. You don't want to do that. Also, if you're a mystery buff, try some of Curry Greenwood Mysteries. Curry Greenwood makes words dance. Never heard of her, must investigate. The following day, Building Communities, Must Listen for Everybody by Droops, founding host number one on HPR, and brings up five comments. Basically, he goes through a lot of things that he thinks we should do. Talk about HPR. We need to outreach, he says. We need to bring more traffic to the site. Kind of disagree with him. I agree with him. We have lots and lots of listeners, lots and lots of them, yeah, lots of subscribers, lots of listeners, but we're getting 0.01% return rate on people contributing shows, and that is even 10%. That's like an order of magnitude worse than what NPR does when it's doing its drives. I don't know what we're doing wrong. Maybe people just relax. But I would feel that if you're listening to this show, and probably something you should know is that all the shows, we do release shows every weekday, Monday to Friday, and it's that consistency that has given us the we've been selected for the podcast awards. Todd Cochran did a video when he announced it, and the first half of that video was very interesting. He describes all the things that you need to do to have a popular podcast, and we're doing all of those things. And the regularity of the show is an important factor in that. And a lot of YouTubers, you know, popular YouTubers will say that as well, the regularity of the show. That's why we do the shows weekdays, Monday to Friday. And that means we have 260 slots a year. And if we've got 25,000 listeners, why have we only got 200, 300 hosts in our 10-year terms? So that boggles my mind. I continue not to understand that. But okay, if we get more people to the site, in principle, we get more listeners. But I don't know how many more we need to bring in order to get more contributors. So not particularly sure about that. His suggestion of getting more popular hosts on, we should do bumpers. We should spread the word. And make shows easier to record, always in favor of that. If somebody's capable of doing an iOS app to record a show and submit it in, that would be absolutely brilliant. And I was thinking of having something on the website that you could actually record a show on the website. Adding images to the shows, and he gives an example here of building community. This is something that's now been supported by Google Podcasts, that each individual show, you can have a particular link for your for that individual show. And that's something that we definitely can do. We can put if you have a specific image that you want for the show, we can put that in. If you don't have an image, we can have your the HPR logo and your host avatar on there with the show name, and failing that, we can have the show avatar. A video about what explains what HPR is, that would be excellent. I have no idea how to do that, because I also struggle with what is HPR. Even explaining it now, I'm like flailing through water. It is a show where people contribute shows. It's about any topic that you're interested in. So I would love people just to, you know, to tweet, what is HPR to me? So email us, what is HPR, or at HPR on Twitter, or on Identica, places like that. We're on social networks, so Facebook and whatever. What is HPR to you? That would be awesome. If you could do a video about what HPR is, that would be cool. The website needs a lot of work related to show lists, show individual show page. Related shows, yeah. Now that's something that we definitely can do with related shows, and that is currently being worked on quite much. Quite much, is that a word? Quite a lot by Dave. If you go to the Hacker Public Radio page, we've redesigned the website actually, and under the contribute page, you will see help out, report missing tags, and if you click on the on that link, you'll get a list of all the tags. Those are short summaries. For every show, we want a short summary about what the show is about and tags about what's in the show. That way, once we have that information, we can put various different tags underneath that will give you links to other shows or topics in series. So do shows about unique software, cool books they're reading, documentaries you've just watched, that sort of thing. And he's on about stickers, bumpers, t-shirts, and that sort of stuff. So we can sell them at a profit or to pay hosting. I'm very reluctant to ask for donations here in HPR, because then that opens a whole bag of worms about who's got counts and I donated and whatever. So if people want to make stickers, you go out, you organize stickers to be made. If you want to get a few people together, you do that. That's fine, and we will. That is a very valid and useful contribution to HPR. But collecting money for it, don't particularly want to associate that. We are paid a lot of our hostings given to us very kindly by Josh Knapp at anonymoushost.com, and if you can, you should have a look and see if you can support his business over there, which is Honest Hosting. So they, whatever you see on there, they're actually not trying to oversell you and stuff. So a lot of comments about this one. Tony Hughes says, building community, really enjoy this. I like some of the ideas you suggested, getting some of the podcasters from popular Linux, Tenix shows to do guests for HPR and publicizing them on their website. This would drive listeners to both HPR and guest shows. It's a win-win situation for both parties. Also, if hosts who have their own blog about HPR would drive more traffic to the HPR site. I did a post on both on my own Makerspace blog for this rare reason after my first HPR show is to be aired soon. Thank you very much, Tony, for doing that. And we have asked a lot of other hosts to do shows for us. And the point is they, quite a lot of them, don't actually listen to other podcasts because they're busy doing their own shows and they want to keep their own content for their own show. So how feasible that is, I'm not sure. And some shows are very good, like Linuxing Tech Show, at promoting other shows, and some are not. So if people want to get in touch with that, and also get in touch with other podcasters outside of the small circuit of Linux community, and try and get other makers and other other people to listen to some of the HPR shows, it's really a good option. And Droop says, tech podcasts, very much out of the loop. What shows would we go after? What shows do you listen to? And Dave says, some great suggestions here, thanks. As far as the tag situation, well, actually, Tony replies going, hi, Droops. We're listening to the Ubuntu podcast, the Pi podcast, Mintcast, Linux Luddites, Bad Voltage, Geek Rant, Going Linux, Computer America, Linux Unplugged, Linux Voice, Dan Lynch, formerly of Linux Outlaws. All of those podcasts are community-driven, and the hosts make good guest hosts and people to interview. I'm not sure other HPR listeners could suggest podcasts. Basically, all these podcasts are on the list of, except most of these podcasters, especially the Linux ones, are on the list of the HPR distribution list when we ask for contributions, and they have been asked for contributions. So some of them have contributed, and others have, you know, played promos and stuff like that. So Dave says, great suggestion. As far as the tag situation is concerned, there's an ongoing project to add these in summaries, and we're asking the community for assistance. So I've already mentioned that. Linking existing shows to the database, that's something that we definitely need to do. So we'll be on that. So in the next show, we had a promo for the Glasgow Pub Crawl 2016, where Kebby and Dave mentioned that it's going to be taking place on the 29th of July and kicks off at 6 p.m. British time in the Slate Bar on Holland Street. So that's in Glasgow. So we'll keep you informed about that as the time goes on. Episode 2037, Alpha 32's Pinhead Oats. It's a talk about how he cuts steel-cut oats, and invites you all to share the pleasure of his favorite recipe. And Dave says, cooking, yay, great show. I use spices a lot, mainly stewing apples, but I've never tried them in porridge. I must be sample them sometimes. On the subject of naming differences, we call dry oats, crushed, ground, chopped, rolled, etc., oatmeal. And you can call what you call oatmeal, we call porridge. I believe, actually, that explains an awful lot. Yes, I think we need more cooking shows. Reasonable recipes sounds like a good idea. As a Sassnach, I'm not sure I'm the right person to talk about Scottish cooking, though. Dave, at what point do you stop being a Sassnach and become a good Celt? Attempting to fix a plastic boat by Jezra. HPR accepts no responsibility whatsoever for anybody mad enough to do what Jezra has done. Remind me, never, ever, ever go fishing with this man. John Culp says, hilarious. Wow, this is the funniest HPR episode I've ever heard. The boat's on fire. As far as making a recording while I'm doing things, he uses a $2 mic plugged into my Zoom H1. Or my phone. Awesome show, Desra. Dennis New says, hilarious indeed. I've lolled a few times, including the four boats on fire. Excellent show. 5150, good times, but I am never going fishing with Desra. Kathy Skoguns says, director, very funny. So funny, I kept looking for the video. Duh, this is public radio. Good job. There should have been a video and there should have been pictures for that. Blather configuration part 0, initial setup. This is part of the accessibility. and this is a show about tearing down the barriers for our fellow hackers. In this episode, John walks you through the process of getting Blather, which is a GNU Linux speech recognition program, running for the first time. Excellent. Covers Arch and Debian, talks about the links and stuff. And what this project really needs is more people to use it, so it can definitely help. And it's amazing to think that the person who considers a blowtorching a boat can also invent a Linux speech recognition system. So, yes, this is why Jezra, we all need to chip together and get Jezra a new boat, or at least a life jacket. The following day, we had Matthew with Why I Use Linux, which is in the series How I Found Linux. And basically, it's interesting. He described that why he used Linux. He found out about word of mouth, bit of a hassle when it gets stuck. And what's telling is he misses it when he's not using it. So that I found myself when I switched over, that I went back to Windows for a while and then I switched to Linux. And at a particular point of time when you're not using it, you are going, ooh, I feel so hamstringed. So very good show. Router antennas, more equals better, ? From a ham radio operator's point of view of router antennas. So yellow lines, so there's a diagram in here about four router antennas. I think this was first show as well for Lyle Lustinger. And definitely more shows about ham radio would be very much appreciated, especially coming from myself, that each antenna of the router gets a slightly different signal from the from the notebook computer. The router then adjusts the antennas electronically to beam the signal like a Yagi antenna does. So in from my limited understanding is that you use reflectance in order to push more of the signal in one direction. And I like the example of using a a little bit of light and you put something behind that. The following day, we had Jane Doc returning again with a list of podcast recommendations, and I just updated those with the links and RSS feeds. I couldn't find an RSS feed for Car Talk or AOPA Live, and this actually could be used as a list of shows that should talk to see if we can promote HPR at all. So Kevin O'Brien, Dan Carlin, thanks for recording this, Jane. I always enjoy seeing other people, what other people are recommending. Also a huge fan of Dan Carlin. I have listened to everyone's hardcore history shows and stay current with common sense. Anyone who loves US history also found Ben Franklin's World at benfranklinsworld.com. They build themselves as a podcast about American history, in which in practice means colonial through the Civil War. Very interested in the in some of those. John Culp, Ask Me Another. I enjoyed this episode. Thanks. If you like Wait, Don't Tell Me, you probably like Ask Me Another if you already don't listen to it. Thanks for mentioning the James Joyce podcast. I'm a huge Joyce fan and at one point studied his works quite closely. If nothing else, the podcast is guaranteed to have a steady source of new material for a really long time. Dave Morris says, Frank Delaney et al. I thought that I thoroughly echo Kevin's comments about Dan Carlin. Also, I knew little about the history of World War, even though my late father was fascinated by it, and our history is full of books about it. Dan Carlin drew a picture of events that horrified and fascinated me. In the past, I have listened to Frank Delaney a lot on BBC Radio, and he presented programs called The Bookshelf, Word of Mouth, both absolutely excellent in my opinion. I shall follow your recommendations and try this podcast as well. Thanks for an interesting show. I don't think actually you can understand World War II without understanding World War I myself. My brother is fascinated by World War I and as am I. Just Me with the first show of next month. You're going to have to tune in next month to hear all about that. So that was a run through of all the shows that we have at the moment. And my counter is already at 52 minutes. This is me waffling and nobody nobody's stopping me. So I'll quickly go through things that have been on the mailing list. So last month we had a call for shows. So what we see happening on HPR quite a lot is we have a call for shows and then people go, oh, we don't want HPR to go away. So there's a big mad rush of shows. And then people submit shows and they look on the website and they see, oh, you know, 10 people have submitted a show, or there's 10 shows been submitted. Sometimes people will submit three shows because they've been working on them and they quickly dump them in. And then the queue looks full. And then it says, oh, you know, it'll be 30 days until the next show is released. So 30 days is a month. So the time between now and the next community news show, that's it. That's, you know, that's 30 days right there. And then they forget that in, you know, 2 weeks' time, you need to come back to the website and look. And then you see there's only 5 days until the next free show, or later still there's only 1 day until the next free show. So we have this constant issue and I don't know how to fix it. And people who can perform me, Droops and Enigma and all the rest of the guys, they also didn't know how to fix it. We tried a calendar, we tried this, we tried that, and the only thing is, I think last year we had several contributors contributing shows quite a lot. We didn't have the issue, but that was simply because there were about three or four people who were in the process of doing series. So the series filled up the slots. So there's about two or three slots a week taken up with these series. And then that was enough for people to fill in the other shows. So basically what we need people to do is record shows. And as I said, if we had even only 10% of all the people who subscribe to the shows submitting shows, we would have 80 years of shows. Like, it's nuts the amount of people sitting back and relaxing, you know, and it's not that difficult. Ask anyone who's done the show. It's like big thing. And then it's up on HPR. It is really as simple as that. You go to the website, you fill in the information, you upload the show, and then we do the rest. It's posted, it comes out, and you're a famous internet hero. So that was me ranting on about that. If somebody can fix that problem for me, that would be absolutely awesome. We had quite a large debate, as I mentioned before. We here, the HPR volunteers, how HPR is kind of structured. If you go to the About page, I did a little bit of a clarification on that. So if you go to Home, the About page, then I give some history of HPR, about the community, that we're a community show, what free culture is, and the governments. So, you know, it's policy based around the mailing list. So we here, as you have got Josh Knapp, who's from anhonesthost.com, and himself, he has basically final say on sites related to security, as he should have, because that's his job. And if he tells me, okay, Ken, you need to stop doing this on site, then we'll have to stop doing that, because it's about security stuff, and they do an excellent job over there, I must admit. Then we have these guys called the admins, which are probably better described as volunteers, like myself, Dave, MY Bill, and various other people. And that changes from time to time, you know, depending on the amount of time. And what we do is we work through processing the shows and put them up, and we coordinate policy and update the website and, you know, to basically do the boring stuff. And you can contact us via email, admin@hackerpublicradio.org. But we have no more say on policy than anyone else. So there have been many occasions where decisions have been taken that I haven't particularly agreed with or liked. But, you know, that's just the way it is. The community is the community. So it's important that you, if you can, you subscribe to the mailing list. It's really easy. It's relatively low volume. Sometimes there's quite a lot of discussion, you know, a few emails a day, and other times there's not. If it's a simple thing like this person wants to reserve this slot on this particular day, we will do that on the mailing list and not necessarily mention it in the community news. But some things we will mention in the community news, and that's what I'm doing right now. And what I'm mentioning is that we want to change HTML to be the default in the RSS feed. So current situation is we have an RSS feed that do not have HTML in the show notes. It has become commonplace to include HTML in show notes so that podcast clients can display images, have links to click on. It means that we will no longer need to display the entire URL, making it more user-friendly. And this was something that Mike Ray and the other blind listeners said, that what we have been doing is putting the, instead of, you know, for more information, please click here. instead of that, what we tend to do is, for more information, please click http://blah blah 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 blah. And the problem for Mike and the screen reader people is that it reads all that instead of just, you know, going to link, so providing a lot of useless information. So a lot of people have been testing websites. There have been quite a few issues reported so far. None of them, thankfully, have been anything to do with HPR, and a few bug reports have been logged against various different people. But this is not a question. So if you can check the test feed out, and that'll be in the show notes for this episode, please check the feeds out, the new feeds, and check them in your podcatcher. And the question is not that the display images, not the display links, because your podcatcher might not support that. Bashpodder, for instance, doesn't. It's just to check whether your episode's downloads or not. If they continue to download, if they haven't downloaded in the past, that's fine. Well, that's not fine. Tell us about it, because we want to fix that too. If they have downloaded in the past and they still download with this, that's what we want to hear about. And during the course of this, I'm maintaining a list of compatibility with Podcatcher players. But I will say the vast majority of Podcatcher players is GPodder and Firefox, strangely enough. So the next one was HPR on Google Play. Can anyone see in the terms and conditions that would prevent us from joining? And there's a link there to the terms and conditions. Nobody's replied, so I presume that everyone's cool with it. And seeing as we're already on iTunes anyway, why not? There was nothing that I could see that was particularly onerous on us, so that was good. But I am not a lawyer. But anyway, today I went ahead and subscribed us to that. The feed is currently in processing. And what was interesting was at the podcast awards thing, he was saying how many people are listening to podcasts via Google Play, that it's on the rise, and iTunes is failing. One thing that really, really annoyed me about both iTunes and Google Play is that they have their own namespaces, so they couldn't use description. No, they have to have iTunes description and Google Play description. I don't see the point myself. It's just like, anyway, that's a little personal rant there about me and XML. Don't get me started. Then we had Venant, V-E-N-A-N-T, Venant, asking about closed docking styles on the keyboard. And this was to do with Mike Ray, who's a blind user, was asking for help on where the dock would be. And I think we were able to sort that out for them. Then we had HPR shortlisted for the People's Choice Awards. So again, can you please make sure and go over there every day? As regular as clockwork, no scripts, please. No scripts. What they do is you'll be asked to put in your email address. The email address will send you a link, and then I think they, at the end of the awards, they just simply throw away all the email addresses. So so please do that. You might also be considering voting for the Bugcast, if you listen to it. Congratulations to the Bugcast team. So every day I nip over, vote for the Bugcast, and I vote for Hacker Public Radio. And you should do too. The Ohio Linux Fest 2016 called for presentations for on Friday, the 7th and 8th of October. So see the mail for that. Site changes to fix navigation. Now, there's been a long-standing bug open with the CSS. Before we had these hover menus, a lot of work was done on putting the hover menus in so you could have a drop-down purely in CSS. A lot of people on HPR don't like using JavaScript due to the potential for all sorts of nastiness to occur. So we don't have any JavaScript on our site at all. So there was a bug that the drop-down menus were not visible. So if you go to HPR's main site, what you would see if you're a blind user would be about, home, get shows, give shows, and that was pretty much it. So very, very bad user experience entirely. So to fix that involved basically going to every page on the HPR website and modifying stuff so that it would know where it was in the menu system. We put in a very flat menu system that has got it's got home, which bring you home. Then you get shows, which will open up, the menu strip will change. Then give shows, contribute, schedule, which is the old calendar page, about, and search. So if you go to get shows, for instance, you'll have a link to the complete episode guide, in-depth series, and download options. So the first thing you get is the RSS syndication, entire audio feed, common feed, and mail list feed. The complete episode guide gives you all the shows with a short summary. Going back to episode one, in-depth series will give you all the various different series we have, and the download options will explain to you the various different options you have for downloading everything. You want to be careful about that because we do have a lot of stuff in our feeds. The give shows breaks down to a submenu of information, theme, topics, recording, scheduling, and uploading. So if you want to just jump to the end, click upload, you'll be brought to the calendar page. So the give shows itself, stuff you need to know, select a topic, recording a show. It's a basic summary. I suggest that everybody reads this because it's obvious that the new hosts read all these pages, but some of the older hosts have not and are asking me questions that have been answered in the pages, which is fine. But I just then reply back to them saying, here's the page on this particular topic. So usually if you've got a question about posting a show, it's covered in this. Then under the contribute page, we want to put in stuff like suggested topics and report missing tags. And if you're going to conferences and stuff, I'd like to expand that there under the contribute page. Then the schedule is simply a link to the upload show page and shows the calendar. The about has got some history about HPR and that sort of thing, and when we were in the press. So if there's any articles or stuff where we've been recommended by people, we just put it in there. It's got the host pages in there, detailed information about each of the hosts, the shows, how you can contact HPR, how you can promote HPR, and various different show comments. And then the search page, which is basically just a search. So that's that. And finally, Dave had in about the community news, which is this show. We had some comments on shows that were posted prior to this month. And in relation to 1580, which everyone can remember was JWP's FAT and NTFS file systems. And the name of the podcast was misspelled as FAST. So we changed that from NTFS, from FAT to, we corrected the typo, basically. In 1967, which I saw the Linux light at the end of the Windows tunnel, which was a show by Not Your Geordie. Windigo says, wrote a novel for the pleasure of using a word processor. If that isn't a quote for a hacker, I don't know what is. Very nice. And just goes to show another thing here with HPR is that people continue to read review shows and go back to them, you know, many, many years after you posted the show. But don't be surprised about that. On Dave Morris's introduction to said part one, we have a comment by Frank. I put off listening to this until I had time and peace to concentrate on following the show notes. Oh, I know what you mean, Frank. All I can say is that regex still makes my brain hurt, but since I have fine-tuned my procmail file, I've got something to practice on. I'm going to listen again to the rest of the series slowly and deliberately. Thanks. If my brain goes away, I'll let you know. Dave replies, good luck with regex. Frank, regular expressions are the language in their own right. It's not a trivial concept to get your head around. However, learning how to use them is very rewarding because they are everywhere. I used to use procmail for my mail back in the day in university when I first connected to the internet and had access to a TCP/IP and SMTP mail. Prior to that, I used DECmail and the UK Coloured Book networking protocols. I found regular expressions in procmail RC challenging, but gradually got the hang of them. I just posted the latest episode, series number 5, and I hope you make a way through all of them and find them useful. Frank says, part of my issue with regex is, of course, that I don't use it much, so learning it is more than an intellectual pursuit. I'm not like I'm a sysadmin, for example, except for my own little home network. That's why editing the procmail RC helps. It gives me a need to learn it. If I ever understand regex, I'll proudly claim the title of Linux Geeks. Frank says, hello, and said, I stumbled across a Linux questions, which somehow seemed germane. So this was a comment. Next comment was on HPR 2007, Dave's new laptop, which Dave Morris replies back to Alpha 32 saying, interesting show. How is Equal Ethronware hardware compatibility? Dave replies, I have to admit that I've not tried anything else on the laptop. I'm waiting to see what Ubuntu 16.04 looks like, but I will try out some live distributions very soon. Oh, excuse me. And on HPR Need Shows to Survive, done by me, episode 2008, we had Frank who asked, I don't quite get it. I never understand the issue why HPR will die if there are no more shows in the queue. What's the problem with a day without shows? Will the server crash to a null point corruption? You said HPR has been broadcasting for more than 10 and a half years. In that case, we would be at something like 3,780 shows by now. Greetings from a springy Europe. And I replied, I'll read it verbatim, actually. I can, because it was. And hi, Frank. Back in the day, we were relaxed in releasing shows, as you suggest. It was fine for a while, but then after a time, the shows were not being released as often. This is why there are only 2,308 shows rather than the 3,780 shows that you said there should be. Around October 2010, there were a few months where with very little activity, and people were saying that HPR had podfaded. I suggested we should either end HPR or continue it, and there's a link in the show notes to that discussion on the mailing list. This was prompted by a Lost in Bronx show, HPR 0560, Old Soldiers, which is an essay about how to gracefully end a podcast. A link in there. Everybody should listen to that show regardless. Following discussions, the promise was made that we would continue as a community podcast, so that when the community decides to finish the project, we play all the shows we have, close it down with grace and dignity. This is why we have the text on each and every podcast. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. And a link to the team page. So if there are no HPR shows, there's no HPR, why drag it out? And if you ask anybody at all, a friend of mine is just going to Thailand for a conference, and he does a streaming video channel on YouTube. And he says that if he ever skips, the fact that he's going to be away for 2 weeks will greatly impede his the number of subscribers. They'll simply unsubscribe, because if you're not doing a show regularly, it will be considered dead. People won't tune in for it. So that's why we do shows every weekday, Monday to Friday, and when we don't, then we turn them away. Because if you don't only release four shows 1 week, what's stopping you releasing three shows the next week, or two shows a month, or one show a month, and then all this work that we've done to build up the podcast network has gone to waste. So that's it. Understanding GNU screen hardline status. And this was a comment by Eric Seuss. Thank you. Very excellent show. I've been looking for, or not just aware that I should have been, for something like screen. Really like this. Thank you very much. Always great to get feedback like that. Very positive. Thank you very much. Parsing JSON with Python, show by Tlatu. And the comment was by R Stackhouse. JSON's rise in popularity was due to its utility as a data transfer format in heavy client web applications. XML is very verbose in comparison to JSON. Back when JavaScript interpreters were slower, the bloat was a big deal. XML just takes longer to parse. And in environments where type coercion is the norm, a lot of type information in the form of an XSD just doesn't make sense. When you own both ends of the communication pipeline, a strict contract isn't really necessary. And you should do a show about JSON. That would be absolutely awesome. And XML, because then I won't need to do it. So, comments on Linux in the church by Todd. Great show. Really enjoyed hearing how your church uses Linux and open source software. Our church used to use Linux in the sound booth, but we started to use ProPresenter, so we had to switch to Windows. We still use Audacity for recording sermons. Very good. EchoPrint. This is a music identification system. And Lander, who had done the show, I had asked the question, was it possible just to check if there was music in there? And the reply is, quite behind my listeners, so I don't think to check the comments until I call the community news. Just so you know, there's an RSS feed for the comments, so you can subscribe to that. Just caught the episode last night. Frankly, I'm in way over my head. Very limited understanding of the fingerprint is that it's just a timestamped list of transitions between sounds. I don't know nearly enough about signal processing in general, nor about how EchoPrint encodes these transitions specifically, to even speculate how one would begin to distinguish between music and speech. That would be really awesome if somebody could do that, though. That would be super, super cool. Geek Dad had a Pi project and an old cloud project, and comment that came in was from Geek Dad thanking John. I bet the Marantz sounds great. My dad had one when he was a kid, which is a 1972 receiver. Episode 2020, Automotive Billing by Brian. There were three comments. John Culp, awesome. Love the show. Please do more car repair shows. This is something I've wanted to learn about ever since my 04 Ranger. I've been trying to do all the repairs myself. Can always use some tips from the episode. Thanks for the great episode. Jim Zatt said, honest auto mechanic, great shows and information. I have a local mechanic that I use for items which I am unable to take care of myself. I have often felt guilty that he undercharged me for the hours worked compared to booked hours. Your insight has relieved my guilt and made me even more confident that he is a good mechanic, and I can feel comfortable referring him to friends. And Maestro 2 says, great show, very useful info, understanding something we have all had occasion to be involved with. And Todd says, great episode. And this, again, wasn't a particularly technical episode, but it was an episode that was of interest to hackers. And that is it, folks, from a very, very hot and humid room here in the Netherlands, because it's been hot all day and it's tempting to derail. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio.
Throw out those 30 licenses, never more.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.